Hello and welcome back to the For the Property Investor podcast and here with the weekly news segment with Nick Bendall again. Good morning, Nick. How are we?
Going very, very well, Owen. You're saying good morning, but maybe someone's going to listen to this in the afternoon. So I will say good afternoon.
Okay. All right. We'll cover all bases. And then and maybe we can finish up with a good evening and good night.
I like that. Something to look forward to. Now people will have to stick around for the entire podcast.
Of course. Yeah, of course, of course. What have you been up to this week, Nick?
Well, last Thursday night, I happened to speak at a commercial lending young professionals event, which is an association for young commercial finance brokers. It was a really, really fun event. And I gave a speech about how commercial finance brokers can use LinkedIn to build a really strong personal brand that allows them to generate referrals and attract client inquiries. It's something I've been able to do on LinkedIn, which is why I was invited to share that knowledge with the brokers in the room.
Great. And what was the feedback from that?
Well, the feedback was positive, which was really, really nice. Had some very interesting chats to people. One of the things I mentioned in the speech, and I tell this to people all the time, you've got to be prepared to play the long game. You've got to be prepared to just keep following the habits on a regular, ongoing basis. Kind of like if you want to get fit, you can't just go to the gym once. You need to keep exercising just all the time on a regular, ongoing basis. And marketing works the same way, and building a personal brand works the same way. And it's funny, I could see everyone in the room agreeing with that. But then I also know from experience that most people just aren't prepared to follow through. So it's one thing to agree with something in theory, but it's a different thing to implement it in practice.
Yes, just like everyone agrees that they should go to the gym, yeah, 3 times a week.
Yes. Us humans, we know what we should be doing, but we don't always do those things.
Yes, it's, yes. So never mind. Well, hopefully, to anyone out there, I highly recommend posting regularly on LinkedIn. It does make a difference. And of course, you can speak to the wonderful Nick Bendall if you need any help, if you're in the finance or property industry, to get content for that. Isn't that correct, Nick?
That is certainly correct, Owen. And what's been happening with you in Leafield?
Busy week in the last week, as always at the moment. I attended an event during the week, a lunch put on by a buyer's agent, giving an update on the market, and he had all of his a bunch of his clients as well as a number of his business partners and referral partners. So it was good to mix with them, and met a lady who has a business, been doing it for a few years now. She used to be a financial planner and specializing in looking after property investors, especially in SMSF. And she's changed tack, and she now helps people renovate their properties for a profit. And she takes on the risk of the renovation, but also gets a share of the reward as well. So she puts her money where her mouth is in terms of how to successfully renovate for profit. So very interesting business and business model. So maybe someone I'll get on the podcast as a special guest at some point.
Very interesting. I've never heard of this model. So am I correct in thinking then that all of her clients sell the home after the renovation?
I've heard of this model before, a couple of people that do it, and it's usually if they wanted to keep the property, then there would be some kind of agreement on what the end value would be, and then they would get a share of that increase in value compared to What was spent, and so would they get they would get their money back on what they spent, and then a share of the uplift in the value.
Oh, fascinating. Very, very interesting. Never heard this model, but very interested by it.
Yeah, so it, I'd like to get more details, but yeah, it's just interesting to see. There's lots and lots of business models out there within the industry, helping people to improve their property values, improve their returns, and yeah, so it's all good.
Fantastic. And ready.
Yeah,
for
what's happening in the news this week?
Well, we've got three stories we're going to discuss. Pardon me. The first one, Owen, Mayor attacks governments over housing supply. Why aren't we building enough homes? When Liverpool Mayor Ned Mannoon was asked by Sky News what the biggest impediment was to building more homes in his local government area, he cited costs. Everything is becoming more costly, he said. You've got all these different ideas that are being drawn up in bureaucracies to try to lead to more affordable housing. But what it's actually doing is slugging the mums and dads and the young kids who are trying to get on the property ladder with more and more costs and more taxes, and it's becoming more unaffordable. Ned Mannoon then called on government to open up supply and make things happen quickly. We're happy to take density in the right areas. We have plenty of density going up in Liverpool, but the problem is the economics. Do we want our Australian kids living in the unit building? Is that the solution? The great Australian dream of living on a quarter acre block is now a fantasy. We have plenty of land. It's not a small country, but the way they're doing things, whether it's Sydney Water doing their rollout or Transport for New South Wales restricting development, those government agencies are restricting housing supply. Oh, and I'm keen to get your feedback. Is the mayor, Ned Mannoon, right to say that the number one reason we're not building enough homes is because it's become too expensive for developers?
Yes, I think he's right on many points there, and that being one of them. It's becoming too expensive for developers in terms of for them to buy the actual land themselves. So, but then to be able to get the finance, that's more difficult and more expensive. And then there's the materials, and then there's the labor cost. So all of those things have gone up dramatically, not just for the end user, whether it be the property buyer, or even and it all flows through to the tenants as well, with rising rents coming through, but even developers, they don't have endless pots of money. A lot of the time, the small mum and dad developer are the ones who are just trying to get ahead, and they're taking the risk off their own bat to be able to do this. So, but the big developers, and we've seen a lot of developers and builders over the last number of years go broke because of these rising costs. And because it has become so expensive. So, yes, something needs to be done to make it easier for developers to be able to start building. Otherwise, we can make all the plans we want in the world to fix the housing supply. But if developers can't buy and build and at least cover costs, let alone make a profit, then it's never going to happen.
I'm so glad you said what you said, Owen. It was one of the things that annoys me is when people talk about property developers, there's one adjective they often use, which is greedy. They say greedy developers, which just annoys me so much, because developers are no better or worse than any other business person. They're not any better or worse than property managers or copywriters or GPs. I mean, when we go into business, we all want to make a profit. And a developer, as you say, they take on so much risk, and so many of these companies can't make money and they go bust. It is not an easy profession. It's very hard to make money. And if things are structured in such a way that they can't realistically aspire to a decent profit, can we be surprised if there isn't enough housing supply out there?
That very good point, Nick. I mean, we don't turn around and because of the rising cost to go see doctors now, which has been out in the media a lot, they don't turn around and say, "Oh, all these greedy doctors are taking advantage of the situation," do they? In the media, it's all put on the government to be able to fork over more money, which is more of our taxpayer dollars. That's probably because doctors are looking after our health, and we want them to be paid well. But yes, the developers. Hey, I've known and met a lot of developers in my time, and yeah, they're not necessarily always doing it out of the goodness of their heart to build houses. But they are the ones that we rely on to build these houses. And units and townhouses and places for everyone to live in. So we need to understand that they are running a business. Yes, they're not doctors saving lives, but they are running a business. They're suffering the same increase in costs as everyone else in business, and especially with the rising cost of materials. The lack of labor and then the rising cost of labor with trades to be able to work on these properties and to build them. So let's stop bashing the builder and the developer and see how we can help them.
And I'm wondering another thing that the mayor Ned Mannoon said. He talked about government agencies contributing to the problem by prioritizing their needs or insisting on particular rules. Is that contributing to the problem, do you think? Do you think he's right?
Yes. I mean, we all need to do things by the rule book, and there's probably very good reasons why those rules are in place. But if they're hindering progress to be able to get properties built, and all it is red tape, and that's stopping these things from happening, or it's a matter of government fees and charges to be able to get things progressing, then that's where the government can help. We if we've got a lack of housing supply as a bit of a crisis going on, as they've been talking about for a while now, then if we can, if the all levels of government can make that process easier by reducing or cutting altogether out those costs, then that helps to increase the supply quicker. And the one thing that will bring prices down quicker for both property prices as well as rental prices will be more supply. That's the only thing that will make the biggest difference. So it's rather than trying to boost first homeowner grants, which increase demand,
no.
Even though I don't disagree with having them, to be able to help young people or first home buyers get into the market, that's great. But all they do is increase demand. And if there's not enough supply, then it just makes the problem worse.
There's something else, the mayor, Ned Mannoon, said that I want to run by you, Owen. So he
said that
the dream of living on a quarter acre block is now a fantasy. And yes, that is the case for most people in most capital cities. But I'm wondering, do you think that's necessarily a bad thing?
I think from times gone past in previous generations, where the quarter acre block with the white picket fence was the dream, and a lot of people would still like to have that, and maybe it's their dream, but priorities have changed now. There's a lot more young professionals who want to live close to the cities. They don't want to spend their weekends mowing the lawn or tending the garden washing the car in the driveway. it's not that what they want to do. So yeah, maybe down the track they might want it, but there's a lot more demand for unit living, and more high density living, and where there's a lot less maintenance to look after. And yes, it's probably true, but it's not necessarily because it's more of a cultural change.
Well, for our next news story, we're going to look at supply from a slightly different angle. Government unveils housing supply plan. The federal government has released draft legislation to introduce tax incentives in the build-to-rent sector, which are designed to stimulate investment and construction. The tax incentives apply to build-to-rent projects consisting of 50 or more apartments or dwellings made available for rent to the general public. To qualify, developers must retain the dwellings under single ownership for at least 15 years and ensure at least 10% of dwellings in a project are made available as affordable tenancies. Treasurer Jim Chalmers said, "Attracting more investment into housing will support our ambitious national effort to build 1.2 million new, well-located homes over 5 years from July 1. Industry estimates that changes to promote build-to-rent investment will make an important contribution to achieving this national target and could see an extra 150,000 rental homes built over the next decade." Owen, as always, keen to get your thoughts. What do you think of government tax incentives to promote build-to-rent development?
I think it's great. There's nothing wrong with it. It's build-to-rent is something that's popular in many places around the world. Hasn't been so much here in Australia. Probably because of the lower yields that we have here. But if the right properties can be built to be able to provide this, but we haven't seen it with enough scale yet to see whether it's going to be a success. Because at the end of the day, the government can give as many tax incentives as it wants. But if it's not financially viable in the marketplace, then it won't be sustainable.
So let me ask a follow-up question on that. The reason big institutional investors aren't investing in build-to-rent right now is because they can make more money investing in other areas. So if we want to make build-to-rent economically attractive for those institutional investors, the federal government has to entice them with tax breaks. In other words, us taxpayers have to subsidise the build-to-rent sector. Is that a worthy use of taxpayers' money?
It's not a bad way, and it's already being done with tax incentives to property investors now. And even though they've been eroded a lot over the last 20 odd years, those incentives, it's still helpful to the individual property investor, especially when they first get started. But as an investor starts to grow their portfolio, they then start getting hit with higher taxes as a result. Everyone agrees that it's they're making money out of it, pay their fair share, but it's the tax incentives to be able to get in, that's great. They're providing housing for people who need and want to rent, so there's not a problem with that, but again, just like some individual investors don't see that the tax advantages and incentives are enough to make it a worthwhile investment. Bigger investors who are being offered these built-to-rent tax incentives, may still see it as not good enough to be able to move forward.
Well, I guess the big picture with this is, if we as a society say, you know, this housing affordability and housing supply thing, this is a problem, and governments, we want you to solve this problem. Governments can't solve the problem without taxpayer money. And so I guess ultimately there's no free lunch here. We have to be willing to spend money as taxpayers if we really want the problem to be solved.
Yes. And if we're giving tax incentives for this build to rent scheme, then why not, going back to our first story, why wouldn't we want to give more tax incentives to a system that we know that at least works? It might not be perfect, but we at least know it works. So let's give tax incentives to developers who are building standard properties, who are not just going to, you know, rent them out, but that they will provide the stock there for whatever the demand is at the time of when they're being sold. So if there's a demand for a lot more investors to be able to provide rental properties for renters, for the rental market, then those investors can buy those properties. If there's a lot of demand for owner-occupied in those areas where these developers are building, then that demand will be taken up as well by owner-occupiers. So yes, built to rent is great in theory. It has worked in other areas around the world. I don't think the answer is one or the other. I think it's an and answer. Yeah, let's do both. Let's give those tax incentives to these developers for build to rent, but also give incentives to developers to help them get these get more properties built as well.
Final story today, Owen. Investor borrowing jumps 23.2%. There's been a significant rise in property investor borrowing activity over the past 13 months, according to the latest data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. In January last year, when investor activity bottomed out, investors took out $7.73 billion of loans. In February 2024, the most recent month for which we have data, investors signed up for $9.53 billion of loans. So that's a 23.2% increase. During the same period, owner-occupied borrowing rose 10.1%. Why is investor borrowing activity growing twice as fast as owner-occupied, Owen? Do you have any theories?
Yes. To answer your question, it's many reasons. The interest rate cycle, a lot of investors in January 23 were still trying to work out where interest rates were going and wanting to make sure that everything had sort of settled down before making any big decisions. And there was a lot happening in the market at the time. It was very much a first home buyer and owner occupied market at that time. As interest rates calmed down, property prices leveled off a little bit, then there was an increase in investor activity. As rental returns increased as well, there was bigger investment activity. So it's just cycles. It's not indicating a long-term trend. It's just a cycle. I mean, you mentioned there that during the same period, owner-occupied lending rose by 10%, which is still a significant amount. But we don't have the figures in the billions of dollars of loans to be able to work out there for owner-occupied lending, to be able to work out, you know, what percentage of overall lending was for investment versus owner-occupied. So that would be an interesting stat to see there. Because the investor portion would still be a lot lower than the owner-occupied lending, I would say.
And I've got a general question I'd love to run by you in terms of property investing in general and the current climate. Focusing on a national level, national property prices have increased for 14 consecutive months. National rents have increased for 44 consecutive months, and national vacancy rates are at ultra low levels. That said, interest rates, as you mentioned, are high by recent standards. So on balance, is this a good time or a bad time to be a property investor?
I don't think it's a bad time. But it all comes down in general, but it all comes down to the individual investor and their circumstances. So that's always going to be the answer, no matter what the market is like, because there's always opportunity and there's always a bad investment in a good market, and there's always a good opportunity in a bad market. So a lot of people try to time the market where it's really that old saying, it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. So you need to make your decision to get into the market when it's best for you, when you can afford to, and then make that decision and be in that market for a long time.
That's interesting. So as you point out, we make money as property investors from time in the market. So we need to hold the property for decades. So I guess then we need to be able to hold the property. Our financial circumstances, our personal cash flow needs to allow us to hold the property. So I guess if we're going to realize those long-term gains, we need to have our short-term finances in such a way that we are able to keep holding the property.
Yes, which is why it can be seen very tough to be able to get a loan these days. The banks are put in a position now where they're effectively responsible for any decision of giving out to the borrower, lending the money to the borrower, and they have to do all that due diligence. But what I would say is get you to every individual borrower is get yourself educated on how money works, and how lending works and how the banking system works, so that you can manage your own finances without the government or a bank telling you how to do it. Be responsible for your own decisions. And that way, you're always in control, as much as possible. You can at least make decisions based on how the wind blows. Because interest rates will change, market conditions will change, banking policies will change, government policy will change. But if you understand this and accept it, and are prepared for any of these changes happening, then you're putting yourself in the best position possible.
Well said, Owen, as always. And I'm guessing this is now the part of the podcast where we wish each other good night.
Yes, good evening and good night. Thank you, Nick. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If there's ever any questions that anyone has about any of this, please feel free to reach out to either of us. And if there are questions that we can't answer, I'm sure we have plenty of people that we can pass the questions on to get back to you about.
Thanks, Owen. Sleep well.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Nick.